Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on a funny old day 9 of Wimbledon 2017, which has seen defending champion Andy Murray crash out. It's seen the withdrawal of the champion of 2 years ago, Novak Djokovic, and a couple of times before that as well, trailing by a set to Thomas Burdick. It has seen a sublime performance by Roger Federer, and it has seen a 5-set battle between Marin Cilic and Gilles Muller, won of course by the 7th seed Marin Cilic. This is the Tennis Podcast. I'm Catherine Whittaker. I'm joined by David Law and, for the first time this fortnight, by The Telegraph's Charlie Eccleshare. Charlie, it has been a weird day, hasn't it?
It has been a weird day, yeah. I think with Murray going out was one thing. To then have Djokovic as well, just a couple of hours later, I think everyone felt a bit shell-shocked.
So, David, you were commentating, I must say, with Goran Ivanišević and Mats Wilander for 5 Live on the Murray-Querrey match. One of the most entertaining commentaries that I've ever heard on the radio, actually, as Thomas Burdick walks past us looking pretty sprightly indeed.
Yeah, not surprising he looks sprightly. I think I had about 4% of... to do with that entertaining element to the podcast, because Mats Wilander and Goran Ivanišević were both fantastic. You said at the start it was a weird old afternoon, and not least because for a set and a half, to my mind, that was the best tennis I'd seen all fortnight from Andy Murray. He was leading a set in 4-3 with a break. It looked vintage Murray, and no sign of any ill health at all. He then threw in a game which I think he lost to Love. And from there, he was never the same again. Even though he won through the third set on a tie break, he was scrapping. He was having to do what he did in the other rounds. And it did increasingly look as though he wasn't well enough to really win the match. And I don't want to take anything away from Querrey. It feels unfair. But that wasn't the real Andy Murray out there for the last 2.5 sets.
No, 6-1, 6-1, the fourth and fifth sets. It's difficult with Andy Murray, isn't it, Charlie? I know that you were in his press conference. He never tells you if there's a physical issue. He both plays his cards close to his chest during the tournament when he's still in, because he doesn't want to give the game away. He doesn't want to give his opponents anything to cling on to. And then when he's lost, he doesn't want to say anything because it could be viewed as unsportsmanlike. So we're kind of left to speculate and read between in the lines. But surely the hip was an issue today, without question, surely.
Yeah, it was. And yes, he keeps his cards close to his chest, but there are times when his actions are more revelatory. And he was break points down when he was 4-3 up in that second set. And he served the first serve at 96 miles an hour. Now, I don't care, you want to vary your play sometimes, but you don't when you're at a huge point. So a first serve at 96 miles an hour, a crucial point in the match that you need to win. So I think that was far more telling than anything he said, because, as you say, afterwards, he didn't want to go into details, and I think he may well not divulge that until after he's played how bad it was this week.
And he did kind of say to Claire Balding, the audio of that interview was just played on 5 Live as I was walking down here, he did kind of say that had it not been, she asked, with the physical injury you've got, if it hadn't been Wimbledon, would you have played? And he sort of started saying, I think I would have played had it been any slam. Implication, if it weren't a slam, I wouldn't have played. But then he sort of stopped himself and rode back and started speaking more generally. But that's what it sounds like to me.
That's the reading I took from it as well. And I think you're right. I think he suddenly thought, well, I don't want to sour grapes or anything like that. I don't want to give people too much of an insight maybe into how bad it is. He said he will sit down tomorrow with his team and work out what the next plans are. And Novak Djokovic is in a similar kind of position, albeit it sounds a lot more serious. He was talking about a year and a half having suffered with this elbow problem, and it does sound as though he needs to have a proper reboot of the body.
It does. Should we talk about Sam Querrey before we talk about Novak Djokovic?
All right, then. Sorry, Sam.
Sorry, Sam. Because he was good today. He was great. And it will go down as the match that Murray lost due to the famous hip injury. But he still had to be beaten. He still had an awful lot of fight in him. And he still had to be roundly beaten. And he was.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. Murray's played four people earlier in the tournament who you now look at and think, well, if they'd really believed in themselves and really gone for it, then shouldn't they have been beating Murray? Because
they'd gone for just a few fewer tweeners.
Yeah, exactly. Played it a slightly less cavalier way. I mean, Sam Querrey was the first non-Maverick opponent that Murray's had. He came out, he hit his spots, he was very consistent. He played smart, he said after the match, yeah, he was kind of aware that Murray was having problems, so he moved him around. And he served incredibly well. And Greg Rozetsky talked about it at the start of the tournament that one of the issues Murray has is that explosivity. And one of the things Murray does so well is those split-second reactions. He did it to Raonic in last year's final, and he just couldn't do it today. And Querrey just kept on finding the lines, hitting those big serves, and it was too much.
Don't be a maverick, kids. It doesn't work. That's the take-home message. Be like Sam Querrey.
Yeah, that's why I've never got anywhere in life. I'm too much of a maverick. But
he's going to get himself a reputation for being the guy that knocks out the ailing champions, isn't he?
It's harsh, isn't it?
It's harsh.
Anyway, he might win the tournament. And Catherine Whittaker's got him in the sweepstakes.
I have got him in the sweepstakes. Yeah. I am 100% a Sam Querrey glory supporter in 2017.
Suddenly, yeah.
Who'd have thought it?
I do think as well, though, it does feel different from Djokovic because retrospectively, we all suddenly realise, yeah, OK, Djokovic has his issues, physical and off the court. But at the time, Djokovic had won 30 straight matches. And going into that, everyone was thinking, this whole tournament could be a cakewalk for Djokovic. You know, he'd won the four previous majors. Whereas today, had more of an upset kind of written all over it, when you think about it, just because of the physical problems Murray's had throughout the tournament.
I'd agree with you. The only... really shocking element for me was that Murray had led a set in 4-3 and was playing so well. That was when I just did not see this coming remotely.
I did notice, though, that at that sort of point, when he broke back and ended up taking that second set, Querrey started to really hit out, and particularly on his backhand side. He's known as a serve and forehand man. Well, he flattened out that backhand and he went for it. And he clearly decided, you know, that's the only way I can win. And I think that then probably got inside Murray's mind a bit. I think that had it carried on the way it was, Querrey would probably have become sufficiently demoralised. I think Andy Murray would have become sufficiently reassured that he could stick with it. And then I think he took a real blow by losing the second set, by, you know, the guy staying around. And he looked a bit just deflated by it all, really, Murray. As well as the physical elements, I think it just popped his balloon a bit.
On the positive side, from a British perspective, David Law, you did manage to elicit, during your Five Live commentary, both the revelation that Goran Ivanišević would be open to an offer to participate in Strictly Come Dancing, and the description from 2001 Wimbledon champion Goran Ivanišević of his dating technique as, quote, chip and charge.
Yes, he was explaining that... Yeah, I've always taken that policy, and he didn't just bring this up out of nowhere. We were discussing Millionaire Matchmaker that Sam Querrey had been on.
When he started winning, everyone started scrambling around for interesting things to say about Sam Querrey and reached for the Millionaire Matchmaker
story. No, this was at the start of the second set, and Goran said, you know, it's not like when I was around. I mean, we couldn't go on reality shows in order to get a date, you know, or sit in front of the computer. You actually had to talk to people. And for some reason, somebody asked, right, so what were your methods then? He said, chip and charge. You know, you might get passed or lobbed occasionally, but you know, you've just got to still keep going.
It's pretty impressive in your second language to produce a dating-based tennis pun like that, I would say.
Yes, I was quite impressed.
Credit to Goran Ivanišević.
I was also pretty worried about the way it was going and was trying to think, right, how do I get the best anecdotes without getting us in massive trouble? Anyway.
You walked the line with perfection.
And we've done a pole vault about whether Goran Ivanišević should go on Strictly Come Dancing.
I've participated in a pole vault for
Catherine
the very first time.
Has voted. How does it feel, Catherine?
If all poll vaults were like that, I'd be fully on board.
What did you vote?
I voted absolutely 100% yes.
Surely that's a landslide vote in favour.
It's actually, there are a good 32% that don't want to see him in Strictly Come Dancing so far. There's still
joyless
plenty of time.
People. There's no accounting for joyless people.
But, you know, I have challenged on air the BBC bosses to,
Yes, David.
We'll
yes.
See.
Using your powers for good.
Sure if I'm allowed to have done that, but I did it.
Novak Djokovic, a very different situation, albeit with the same sort of injury-based headline, retiring, trailing by set to Thomas Berdych. I mean, he was serving at below 100 miles per hour throughout the whole match, pretty much. He has subsequently said in press that it wasn't the shoulder that we feared would be the issue going into the match. It was actually the elbow. He says it's been an issue on and off to varying degrees for the last year and a half. He said in the Serbian portion of his press conference that he might need to take 6 months off, which would, of course, mean missing the US Open. It doesn't sound good for Novak Djokovic, Charlie.
No, I mean, it's a strange one, because I was in Eastbourne a couple of weeks ago, and he was full of the joys of spring, seemed to be enjoying his tennis again, and he looked fit, he looked fresh. And then yesterday he covered the Mannarino match, and all those niggles and ailments suddenly seemed to be back, and I don't know how much of it was a mental thing. Clearly today it was a physical thing, but I think some time off would be not such a bad idea. I think that's probably true of Andy Murray as well. You know, these guys have been playing relentlessly for so many years and such a brutally physical brand of tennis. I think, you know, they might look at Roger Federer. I mean, he's obviously a unique case, but look at him and see that actually rest can do you good. And it's not just, you know, doing your training regimes and being more physical than your opponents.
He's a walking advert for time off, isn't he? Every time he steps on the court.
I think it's a serious point, because this guy has rewritten what you do if you want to get your body feeling like it used to. He's nearly 36 years of age. In his victory today, he looked better than he has in years. And it's not just the mindset of... I mean, I think his mindset is an important factor, that he is not trying to rally with people anymore. He is trying to knock them off the court with every stroke. And if he doesn't manage it in one rally, he reboots immediately. And, in his words, he stays optimistic. He stays positive that it'll keep happening and it'll come. He has refreshed himself to a point where I think Djokovic will look at that and think, well, you know what? I'm going to do that as well.
I was just going to say, I wonder if a part of Murray looks back on that semi-final French Open run and thinks, yeah, that was good. Would I have been better off maybe missing that? Would that have given me a better chance at Wimbledon? And when you're 30 and, you know, surely thinking about accumulating as many Grand Slams as you can, is it time to start being a bit prudent, both him and Djokovic, maybe not going for absolutely every tournament and maybe pacing themselves a little better?
Yeah, I mean, it's been the unthinkable before now, but Federer has made it the thinkable, and I think at the very least it will start occurring to the likes of Murray and Djokovic. And it would certainly be interesting if Djokovic does end up missing the US Open. Of course, he's got final points to defend. If he'd won today, he would have gone to world number one. It's crazy, isn't it? As it is,
there's no point in him playing like he was today. That was depressing. Watching a guy who is that great hitting serves of less than 100 miles an hour, because he just can't.
It's not the main topic of discussion, given the fact that Djokovic has said in his post-match press conference that the issue is one that's been troubling him for a year and a half. But we've discussed it already, of course, so we don't need to go into it in detail. But looking back now on what happened on Monday, on Manic Monday, when he wasn't moved to centre court to complete his match and was forced to come back on Tuesday and denied his day off, that starts to look like even more of a disadvantage for him in light of what happened today, doesn't it?
It definitely didn't help him, but I kind of feel with both him and Murray, if it wasn't today, it would have been later on in the tournament almost. Like, it feels that they were just getting by on memory and the fact that they are so supremely talented and that their will to win is such. I kind of feel with both of them eventually, in Djokovic's case, Federer, in Murray's case, I think Cilic in the semi, quite frankly, or if not Federer. So, yeah, I mean, clearly Djokovic got harshly done by on that Monday, but I don't think that'll be the difference between him winning Wimbledon and not, put it that way.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that's a good point. I like that they've been getting the phrase that they've been getting by on memory. That's sort of what I've been searching for. I remember thinking the same last summer when Djokovic won Toronto and reached the US Open final. He wasn't playing like the Djokovic of before. He was just doing it on muscle memory and champions memory, and I think opponents still, he retained the locker room aura. He was still walking out onto court three love up, and there was almost a lag in people's responses to them, and I think that's probably been the case for Andy Murray as well. But they're out of the tournament. Those that we are left with are a semi-final of Roger Federer against Thomas Burdick. It's another bad head-to-head for Thomas Burdick, and Marin Cilic against Sam Querrey.
Yeah, and to complete the story, I mean, first of all, you'd like to say well done to Thomas Burdick, but it feels a pretty hollow victory. It was 7-6, 2-love.
He's just skipped past us. He didn't look too hollow.
No,
he looked happy.
Look,
I mean, he was
bouncing.
It's
not his fault, is it?
He's
through. And also, when he won the match, he went out into the centre of the court. He put his arms out wide to the crowd as if to say, I'm sorry, I know you were hoping to see more tennis. What can I do?
But I think cumulatively, he feels like he's earned it, doesn't he? Maybe not today.
Well, he's stuck in there mentally, isn't he?
If you get beaten 25 times or whatever it is, you probably will take the win anyway.
It must be so hard to keep getting beaten and keep coming back for more, because that is demoralising for a player. He didn't do that. I was also particularly impressed with the way Cilic mentally stayed with it against the man of the moment, Gilles Muller. He went a set behind. Muller was playing really, really well. Eventually, Cilic managed to get into a fifth set and absolutely dominated from there on, 6-1. And he's the big threat to me for Federer now. I said at the outset of the tournament, I saw those two meeting in the final. Just leave that
David's
there.
David's doing an annoying face.
And Charlie's also of the same opinion. I think Charlie picked that too.
You picked it at the start.
Oh, no, I picked it once the quarter final.
Oh, well, I'm not talking to you then. I picked it at the start. So anyway, that having all been said, you know, we're not quite there yet, but that still feels like those are the two players that are going to meet in this final to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Burdick, it's clutching at straws. I remember the 2015 Australian Open, and he beat Nadal in the semi, having had a terrible record against him. I think it was 17-0 or something. So maybe he can upset the head-to-head against Federer, but it looks unlikely.
The head-to-head is 18-6 in Federer's favour, and Burdick's last victory over Federer was in Dubai in 2013, 6-4 in the third.
He did beat him at Wimbledon, though, in 2010 in a four-set quarter-final.
In 2010.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's going to play himself videos of that from now until Friday.
The one that still springs to my mind between those two is the match at the Australian Open this year. That was the moment that we knew something was up here, because we thought Roger Federer would, you know, come out, everybody would be delighted to see him fit again and able to play. And his first two rounds in the Australian Open, frankly, were nothing hugely encouraging for his fans, I didn't think. Then he played Burdick, and he produced a performance that nigh on humiliated Burdick. And I felt actually really sorry for Thomas in that match. It's one of the best performances I've ever seen from anybody. Federer beating Murray in straight sets, just about the only one I can think of.
I mean, today's performance against Raonic was pretty sublime. I mean, I think that's going to be really tough for Raonic to take, because there's such a direct comparison between where he was last year, and Federer's better than he was this time last year, and Raonic is probably by the same margin a less good player than he was last year. And one thing that struck me was how much the speed with which Roger Federer plays the game between points, how much that helped him in a match like that, because for Raonic it must have just felt like it was spiralling. It felt like it was going away from him so quickly. Doesn't give you a chance to regroup and think, my goodness, how can I get a foothold in this match? The sense of the spiralling is really helped by the speed with which he plays, I think.
Definitely. It was the same with Grigor Dimitrov on Monday. You just felt sorry for him, because no sooner had he, you know, ground out what felt like a precious service hold, Federer was coming out and holding in about a minute. It reminded me of that that Murray service game in that semi-final that David referenced, where it took Murray more than 10 minutes to hold and Federer came out and held to love in about a minute. It's just, where do you go from there?
Utterly demoralising. Is he going to do that against Thomas Burdick on Friday? Should we save predictions till tomorrow?
Yeah, I think we should. But yeah, I do think he will do exactly that. But yeah, we'll save proper... I might change my mind in 24 hours, so we'll see, won't we? But look, I mean, the form he's in, the state of mind he's in, I can only see a Cilic-Federer final. That, I think, could be competitive. We'll move on, though, and get to that in due course.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Now then, we should probably just quickly look ahead to tomorrow's semi-finals. First up, it is not Joe Konta. Joe Konta against Venus Williams is the second match. First up, it's Garbiñe Muguruza against Magdalena Rybakova. Is there anybody that is giving Rybakova the benefit of the doubt and predicting that her upset run of upsets will continue?
Not me, I have to say. But then, you know, we've been wrong about her numerous times this tournament. No one thought she'd beat Pliskova, and Vandeweghe was who I thought would win the tournament. So she's already proved me wrong a couple of times. I think Muguruza will be too strong. She's striking the ball so cleanly. She looks so confident and at ease with herself again. You know, she's had a pretty rough year since winning the French. I think the weight of expectation really weighed heavily on her, and she's come here, she's a lower seed, so she's come in with fewer expectations and looks like she's in a good place, and I think she'll come through that, maybe in three sets.
The big one then.
Well, first of all, just on Rybakova Muguruza, what I have seen enough of from Rybakova against two big hitters in Karolina Pliskova and Coco Vandeweghe is that she can mess with minds. Her style of game can make it awkward, can discombobulate. And Muguruza likes a regular pace. If she can upset that rhythm, it's not impossible.
It's certainly not impossible.
I would still pick Muguruza to win, probably in straight sets, but there's just a little doubt in my mind because of those styles.
How about Venus and Konta then? We've put it off for 24 hours. Last night we decided we'd allow ourselves another 24 hours before making a prediction. Now we've got you, Charlie. We don't have to.
It's such a... It's such a tough one to call that. I mean, they're so well matched and they play quite similarly. And obviously the head-to-head 3-2 in Konta's favour. I think Konta will come through that. I think it will be tough, but I think she'll come through in three sets. She looks so fearless out there, and I don't think the pressure will get to her. And yeah, I think she'll just about have enough.
That's what you said last night, David. You said you put Konta is the marginal favourite. I take it you're standing by that. Nothing's changed, has it?
No, nothing's changed. I still think she's the favourite. I think she has that relentlessness about her game, which I think causes Venus Williams problems. She drives her back with the depth and pace and weight of her shots. And I still think the one unknown is the occasion. And she's been wonderful so far, Konta. She's dealt with every one of these big centre court, you know, whole of the nation looking at her situation. 7.4 million people
but
watched
now
that.
Now Murray's win. Out and she's everything.
Yeah, look.
It's all on
still,
her.
There is still that unknown. Is there going to be a point at which she just stops in her tracks and thinks, uh-oh.
Charlie's shaking his head.
Look what is about to happen. This is the semi-finals of Wimbledon. I've got a five-time champion who used to be my idol on the court. Everybody in the whole country is waiting for me to do this.
She beat her idol to win her first title in Stanford.
And it's about the process. It's about staying present. Have you not been listening to Jo Konta?
Yeah, she's doing yoga as we speak. She's channeling Zen.
But look, I think she can handle it. I think she will handle it. And I think she will win.
Right then, one last bit of any other business. I'm agreeing with both of you and moving on quickly because I just don't feel confident about it at all. I don't feel confident about any of my predictions.
You picked her to reach the final at the start of the tournament.
I did, yeah.
What am I saying?
But I'm being
for?
A bit sheepish about that now because I don't know. I don't
because
know why.
Because you might be right.
Because, I don't want to crow before it's happened.
Oh, that's the best bit.
Yes, see David and Vanderway.
Yes, all right, move on.
One last quick bit of any other business, which is particularly apt because we've got you here, Charlie. IBM Telegraph teamed up this Wimbledon with IBM Watson, the IBM's artificial intelligence platform, to delve deeper into data available in tennis and analysing the various factors that weigh on a tennis match, how important they are, and how much of them relative players have in their arsenal. Today's is returning, the greatest returners of all time. Who would you guess would have come out top in that, David?
I would have picked two players, personally, partly because some of the data is about the coverage that it gets, not only the statistics and how many service returns you get back in court or break points you win or service return games you win. Traditionally, the two players when I was growing up and getting interested in tennis and working in tennis, the two greatest returners were regarded as being Jimmy Connors when I was a kid, and later Andre Agassi for his ability to take the ball early. Let's not forget, this is a guy who in 1992 beat Boris Becker in the quarterfinals, John McEnroe in the semifinals, Goran Ivanišević in the final, basically with the return of serve. He would stand on the baseline. He would half volley the ball back. Nobody stayed back against these serve and volleyers. He did, and he beat those guys and won the title.
Well,
so he would be who I would have picked.
That you're in fine company, David, because an artificial intelligence platform agrees with you.
Oh, brilliant.
IBM Watson says that Andre Agassi is Wimbledon's greatest returner. He won 40.04% of return points, very closely followed by Murray, with 39.73 and Djokovic at 38.99. They've also analysed when those return points are won, who uses their return weapon at the most important moments, and Federer comes out top. His breakpoint conversion performance, receiving breakpoints, is 42.96%.
And I would never have thought of Roger Federer as one of the great returners of the game. Isn't it interesting?
I wouldn't have thought of him as being that clinical on breakpoints, because he's had problems with breakpoint conversions in some of his biggest matches. I'm thinking a couple of French Open finals against Nadal. So that's interesting that he's so high on that. Djokovic and Murray, less surprising. I would have thought Leighton Hewitt might be high up, but perhaps he is.
I would have thought so too, but he doesn't feature, I'm afraid. Great apologies to Leighton. You can't argue with the data.
I saw him
but
today. I'm not telling him that.
This is the beauty of it, because there's a hashtag, Charlie. There's a hashtag.
Brilliant.
Hashtag what makes great. So if you disagree with all of this, you're very welcome to, and you can have your say with the hashtag what makes great. If you want to have a look at the data to better inform your contrary opinion, then go to ibm.com/Wimbledon. And if you want to see what Charlie and the rest of the Telegraph's excellent writers have to say about the data, then go to the Telegraph.
Don't disagree with me, that's all I'll say.
I like that kind of summarizes Twitter, that here are all the facts, here's the data, but feel free to disagree with it and tell us that you think better.
Very nicely summarized. Charlie, it's been great to have you on the Tennis Podcast day 9, hopefully.
Hey, Roger Federer has just been announced into the press conference.
Does that mean he'll be walking past us?
Should we stall in hopes of
Just doorstepping Roger Federer and getting him on the tennis podcast.
I think we might get rugby tackled.
Has anyone got anything interesting to say in the stalling period? Any other business?
Could we try and get Federer's prediction for Friday if he does come back?
Could we try and get his opinion on whether Goran should participate in Strictly Come Dancing?
That's the big stuff, isn't it? Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll do a little insert if he does end up walking past us. But this, I don't feel like we're making great enough radio now to justify a Roger Federer insert. So I will wrap up. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.